Yeah, yo, when the time is worse, never leave my fam in a jam, I'm dying first. Never till my last dollar, I'm grinding first. Never take the stand on my fam, I'm silent first. It's going down, you feel me? The alchemist in the flesh, and I love this profession, but I'll throw it all away in a second, cause I'm for the cause when my life is threatened. Take this and that, maybe that'll take that. Yeah, you know how we cooks the pot up. You could get caught up in some things you would not want us to slow. And watch how I mold the sound, so when I ain't around the music still. But I'ma keep my eyes open, yo, I don't even blink. Keep the pen moving down the line, I don't even think. Just write it, on the paper, get my vocals in sync. Check how it sounds.
Even when it's hard, I'm going to make sure that I'm around to hold you. We'll never leave the side until the day I die. I'm gonna recognize that this game can be hard. Long as you roll with me, we are. If I decide, always hold me down, baby.
To all my people I war for, blow the 444. You know I get
you know it.
Even if we trap standing back to back, gal.
No doubt.
No matter if you're wrong or right, you still right. For you I lay a man. I don't care if it's the president, I cock my heat, man. For all your chickens in the club, if you hop in my truck, first thing you're gonna go. And when we get to the telly, I'ma bend you over and...
Hey yo, mall thugs, drops and trucks. We got enough paper to front. You see our guns and ducks. Somebody finna get wigged. Homie, I hope your outfitters. I seriously doubt it. My chain costs a quarter mil. Imagine what I spent gun shopping. Got bullets by the thousands. The shots won't ever stop. They say that we wildin'. And I'm far from recluse. Right on Front Street with the fullies and the coops. For the drama and the shooting, then I take bullets and die.
Even when it's hard, I'm going to make sure that I'm around to hold you. We'll never leave the side until the day I die. I'm gonna recognize that this game can be hard. Long as you go with me, we are.
Creep on in. Ooh. See, I'm riding high. Whoa. Kinda broke the scene, y'all. So all I got is fire.
Player, give me some brew and I might just chill. But I'm the type that like to light another joint like Cypress Hill. I still do be spit loogies when I puff on it. I got some bucks on it, but it ain't enough on it. Go get the STIDES. Nevertheless, I'm hella fresh, rolling joints like a cigarette. So pass it across the table like ping pong. I'm gone, beating my chest like King Kong. It's on, wrap my lips around the 40. And when it comes to getting another stogie, fools all kick in like Shinobi. Know me, ain't my homie to begin with. It's too many hands to beat. Probably let my friend hit bit. Unless you pull out the fat crispy $5 bill on the reel before it's history. Cause fools be having them vacuum lungs. And if you let them hit it for free, you hella dumb. Dumb. I come to school with a tailor on my earlobe. Avoiding all the thick teasers, skeezers, and weirdos. Got me throwing off the land like where the bomb at. Give me $2, you take a puff and pass my bomb back. Suck up the dank like a Slurpee. The serious bomb will make a nigga go delirious like Eddie Murphy. I got more growing pains than Maggie. Cause homies nag me to take the dank out of the bag. Whenever I can, don't need no crutch. I'm so keyed up till the joint be burning my hand. Next time I roll it in a hamper to burn slow, so the ashes won't be burning in my hand, bruh. Hoogees get hit, but they know they got a pinch and bent. I roll a joint that's longer than your extension. Cause I'll be damned if you get high off me for free. Hell no, you better bring your own slip cheap. What's up, don't babysit that? Better pass the joint. Stop hitting cause you know you got asthma. Crack the 40 open, homie, and guzzle it. Cause I know the weed in my
system is getting lonely. I gotta take a whiz test to my P.O. I know I feel, cause I done smoked major weed, bro. And every time we with Chris, that fool rolling up a fatty. But the Tangeray straight had me. My yesternight thing got me hung off the night train. You fade, I fake, so let's head to the east. Hit the stroll to 9-0 so we can roll big hashish. I wish I could fade the 8, but I'm no budget. Still rolling the 2 though, cut the same old bucket. Foggy window, soggy endo. I'm in the land, getting smoke with my kid.
Up in smoke, yuck, I spray you laying down. Up in the OAK, the town. Homies don't play around, we down to blaze a pound. Then ease up, speed up through the ESO. Drink the VSOP up with the lemon squeeze up. And everybody's throwed up. I'm the roller, that's quick to fold up. Blunt out of a bunch of sticky doja. Hold up, suck up my weed, it's all you do, kicking. Because we're IBs, we need to have like a foo-foo.
Bro Diallo Show, Q4 Radio, AM 1680, City of Chirac, State of Drill, Illinois, United States of America, today is September 30th in the year of your Lord, 2019. You can hear me, find me, see me on AM 1680 in the City of Chicago. If you have the TuneIn app or iTunes Radio, live and direct, or go to the website www.qe4.org. And of course, YouTube, we out, yeah. We over there on YouTube at Diallo Kenyatta. If you're watching on YouTube, why ain't you subscribed? Huh? What? What? Anyway, today's show is Cooperative Economics and Grassroots Socialism. It's what we're going to be talking about. But I had to play some songs that I felt adequately articulate to bring us in, to get us more hype. Socialism embedded within hip hop. Heaven Tonight making a collective push. He said, Boots from the Coup said, let's make heaven right here just in case we wrong. So Heaven Tonight by the Coup, Boots from the Coup. Then we got, which did I play? Alchemist by Prodigy. My firstborn man child was born in 2002. And that song, Hold You Down, I never leave your side until the day I die. I'm going to hold you down. I used to sing that song to my son incessantly, too, even where my wife was like, ugh, can you stop singing that song? Just stop singing in general. But that song in particular. But I used to sing that song to my son when he was a little baby. But now he's a 6'4" musk monster, and I don't sing to him at all. But, you know, still my son, still my boy, firstborn son. Anyway, so that was The Alchemist featuring Prodigy, Hold You Down. And, of course, the most socialistic, communistic, collectivist hip-hop track in history. Even though Boots Riley is a professed communist, I still give that to I Got Five on It. I Got Five on It is pure socialism, collectivism, shared work and responsibility. Kuji Chakalia, Umoja. That should be the Kwanzaa theme song. If you're not singing I Got Five on It at Kwanzaa, you're not truly Afrocentric. You're not truly in the spirit of Kwanzaa. You know? So, anyway, I Got Five on It by the Lunas, classic track. Everybody kick in, everybody get something out. That's socialism. Anyway, no more delay. Where are we going this morning? First, I need to say something. Now, I just saw this last night. My brother, man, my brother from another mother had posted this article from WBEZ. And if you're not in Chicago, you probably don't know what WBEZ is. But WEBZ, Chicago, which is my rival, is a Chicago public radio, or which basically carries NPR, National Public Radio. And it's the station that I listen to wherever I go. I'm that dude. Wherever I am, first thing I do is I try to find the NPR station in your town. And, you know, if you've been listening to Bro Diallo, what one of my marketing schemes, one of the ways I wanted to promote my radio show was to start a beef. Because that's how these rappers get famous. That's how Tekashi 6ix9ine got famous. So I figured I tried to get some talk radio host to try to start some fake beef. You know, Brother Kitty Obiawadu, LIB Radio. If you're not tuned into LIB Radio, why not? Y'all gonna have to start explaining stuff to me. I'm always trying to explain things to the people. The legendary, my radio role model, Bob Law, Kitty Obiawadu. I said, let's start a fake beef. These men are too educated, too dignified, too mature. So I said, fine. Y'all don't want to start beef so our radio stations can blow up like the World Trade? So we can start getting some hits instead. We're not yelling in the dark. We can get some of them big rap numbers. Fine. So then I tried to start a beef with WBEZ. And I came on the air. I tried to call out Terry Gross. I tried to call This American Life, This American White. But they didn't respond. They didn't take the bait. They're too professional and dignified. So I said, fine. So I had to give up that scheme. We're trying to promote my show by having talk radio beef. Wouldn't that be wonderful? If not even dangerous. Okay, we're not dangerous, but it'd be comical. But it didn't work. But now this is not me trying to. I've given up on that. So I'm not calling out WBEZ for that. I've given up on trying to market my show by beefing with other talk radio hosts and other talk radio stations. I've given that up. But if you live in Chicago, you will know that WBEZ is the home of NPR, and it is considered a progressive, liberal talk station. But they had a headline about 5 days ago saying Fox argues for a right to lock up 10 to 12-year-olds. Now, if you don't follow Chicago politics, you got to go do a couple of things for me. Go Google Buy Anita, or hashtag, I don't know, hashtag Buy Anita. When Rahm was exiting office, or when Rahm was still in office, Mayor Zionist, Mayor Fascist, Mayor Obama Plant, Rahm Emanuel, he covered up the murder of Laquan McDonald. And he covered up a lot of torture. He protected the Chicago Police Department and cooperated with the Fraternal Order of Police, which is the policemen's union, to cover up crimes, atrocities, murders, corruption within the police department. And there was a state's attorney by the name of Anita Alvarez, who was also a friend of the police department and the Fraternal Order of Police. So I'm not going to bog y'all down, because this is water under the bridge. This is ancient history. This is way, way back in 2006. We're Americans. I know y'all don't like to look back. So you look forward. And you're on the city on the hill. I know that. So I won't bog you down. But anyway, there was this campaign to oust Rahm Emanuel and to oust Anita Alvarez. And this sister, this black woman by the name of Kim Fox, a warrior lawyer, as sometimes we call them, stood up to challenge Anita. She got into office, and she, being a politician, she did some things that are questionable, compromising, and then she did some things that were admirable and commendable. But long story short, of course, she got justice for Laquan McDonald. She was crucial to getting justice for Laquan McDonald. And so, excuse me, of course, the police hate her. The Fraternal Order of Police hate her. The Chicago Police Department hate her. Rahm Emanuel hated this sister. And I don't know how you can hate a sister with a perm this late. I mean, she is luxurious. Just go Google her. I mean, I ain't never, man, that hair, that sister's hair is late. She need, boy, let me tell you something. I ain't even into perms like that. That's not my personal foray into the forte. But damn, Anita. Instead of, I keep calling her Anita. I actually would call Anita Fox because I was back in that campaign. But anyway, damn, Kim. Little Kim Fox. Anyway, her perm be laid, so you know she one of us. You know she one of us. Because just look how her stuff lay down. You know, that's a sister. That's one of us. She ain't no Coon Tom handkerchief head. Cause, I mean, just look how it lay. Anyway, let me not get too distracted. WBEZ, but first of all, the police and the Fraternal Order of Police have said that Kim Fox is soft on crime. They said that Kim Fox let Jesse Smollett walk, and they tried to drum up this Jesse Smollett thing, Jesse Smollett getting off, and that the police put all these man hours, and they were just weeping and wailing that Kim Fox is playing favors, Kim Fox is corrupt, the Fraternal Order of Police and the Chicago Police Department won't work with her, they don't trust her, they've lost confidence in her, and the police were protesting, and the establishment politicians were, oh, Anita. But the thing that the police and the Fraternal Order of Police don't understand is that people don't give a damn about the police. Everybody knows the police corrupt. Even white racist people. Even the white elites up on the Gold Coast. Everybody know the Chicago Police Department ain't nothing but a state sanctioned gang. Everybody know it. Nobody doubts it. And so that was just not a good angle for them to come at Anita from, saying that she doesn't have the confidence of the police. It used to be if you were in the judicial system, if you were a judge, a prosecutor, state's attorney, but if you were in the judicial system and the Fraternal Order of Police and the Chicago Police Department said they didn't have confidence in you, that was a political death sentence. Because everybody was like, well, Officer Friendly, the people who put their lives on the line to protect us, don't protect if you're soft on crime. That used to be a death sentence. But people are a little bit more hip and a little bit less apt to believe the popo. So that didn't work. So they were like, man, Anita, Lord help me. Lord, walk me through this. Lord, send shower your blessings and help me to call this woman by her proper name. I hate Anita so much. I got Anita on the main. Bye, Anita. Stay gone, Anita. It haunts me. Anita Alvarez, scum of the earth. But Kim Fox, her replacement. So now they want to say, well, election is coming up. Anita's seat is up. And they got five casserole eaters. I'm sorry. Let me not be racially insensitive. They got five white people whom I'm sure are good. No, I'm not. No, they aren't. They're horrible. But I'm sure they even got a white Republican. And you know, Republicans don't get no love in the city of Chicago. Republicans, I don't know. They just hate her so much. They had to throw a Republican at her. But they got a bunch of these white folks running against Kim Fox to take Kim Fox's seat. And none of the white folks are getting traction. Ain't nobody paying attention to the white folks. Ain't nobody paying attention to the popo. And the white political establishment in Chicago is pissed off. Like, why can't we bring this sister down? They use all their normal tricks to bring a sister down. And they're not working. So now they went to WBEZ. And WBEZ is considered liberal talk radio in Chicago. I listen to WBEZ. I listen to it. My wife listens to it. Most of the egghead, nerdy black folks, most of the liberal white folks in this city, we all listen to WBEZ. And we know that the radicals don't listen to it. I'm a radical, but I listen to it. But I'm not the best radical in the world because NPR is National Petroleum Radio. We know it is corporate sponsored. And, you know, I have to stop. We have to start using proper terminology. So I've gone to call media status quo media, because the term left wing media and right wing media doesn't make any sense anymore, because left wing media used to be leftist, or even liberal media used to be liberal, and conservative media used to be conservative. But now there's a hodgepodge. Now you got something like Saturday Night Live, which used to be liberal media, now has conservative ideas. They had Sarah Palin, John McCain, even Trump be celebrity host on the show. And they've got a lot of status quo rhetoric in the show, a lot of centrist, neoliberal status quo rhetoric. But then you have right-wing media, but you have somebody like, what's that guy's name? Howard Stern. Howard Stern is a right-winger. But he talks about everything from, sex and drugs and things that used to be associated strictly with the left. And then you got that Malinakis guy who's in the media, who's a flamboyant homosexual, but he's a right-wing fascist racist. So there's no such thing as right and left because they all merge together because all the right and the left media are all owned by the same multinational conglomerates. So now we have to start saying status quo media and non-status quo media. And I know that's not as easy to say. Or you can say status quo media and progressive media or status quo media or radical media. But you can't say left media and right media because if you call something right media, then you think Fox News is right. MSN or CNN is left. No, CNN is not left. It's not liberal. It's centrist. It's often conservative. And Fox News puts out some of the most janky, ratchet leftist propaganda when they want to. They'll promote weed or drug legalization. And then you look at Fox News and they've got the Koch brothers or a Koch foundation on there talking about prisons and prison reform. So what you have to divide media up is in status quo media versus non-status quo media. Because if you this left, right, liberal, conservative, y'all think that Obama is a leftist or a progressive or a liberal. No. He's not. Obama is a right winger. He's a right leaning centrist. So anyway, status quo. That's what we call it. Because we want to be, and I know y'all have been taught to hate this word, politically correct. And if you don't like politically correct, say linguistically accurate. We want to call things what they were so that we can be intelligent people. This anti-intellectualism, let the white people have that. Oh, America first. I don't give a damn. Yeehaw. That's not us. Black folks, we can't afford to be stupid. A white boy can be stupid, drunk, toting a gun and driving his truck and the police pull him over and give him a warning and escort him home. Black people in a racist country can't afford to be stupid. And we let the left and the right media both attack political correctness. And you think political correctness is tiptoeing around people with stupid sensitivities. That's not what political correctness is. Political correctness is proper context and proper identification. So status quo media. The status quo media can be leftist or rightist, liberal or conservative. It could be religious or secular. Don't let them play with you. They all on the same team. It's like wrestling. You know damn well Hulk Hogan and the Iron Sheik all on the same damn team. They got the same people cutting them checks and they come out and perform with you and you rooting for Hulk Hogan thinking he's against the Iron Sheik when they didn't rehearse and choreograph the whole damn fight the night before. That's how the left and right media is. Anyway, I have to say all that to say WBEZ comes out with a headline that you would have thought you'd see on Fox News. Something you would probably see on 4chan. Now, what they want to do now is saying, listen, we tried to subvert Kim Fox in many ways. And her supporters aren't buying it. Her supporters hate us and they are content, if not ecstatic, with Kim Fox's record and Kim Fox's stance. So we couldn't bring her down. So now they coming for us. Instead of attacking Anita, they want to propagandize her supporters. Anita, God. Yeah, I told you, God. Okay, God, I got it. Step off, God. Not Anita. I did this last night when I was talking to my wife about this article. Kim Fox, and if you're confused, I don't blame you. That's on me. Anyway, Kim Fox's support base is the black Democratic voters, black masses, the masses of black people, and liberal whites. And so they were like, we have to tarnish her among her base. And so now they come up with this headline. Fox office argues for right to lock up 10 to 12 year olds. And then when you read the article, They basically lay out a bureaucratic oversight. And the state's attorney's office is basically saying, number one, the position of the city, the ordinance of the city is inconsistent with state law. So you got to make them align. And now that we are not putting children into detention, you have provided no budget and no alternatives for children who are in state's custody. So you got to provide proper facilities for children, and you have to align your policies either through a legislative or some type of negotiated with the state, because the city government has to be attuned with the state government, just like the state government has to be attuned with the federal constitution, the state constitution, the local ordinances. It all has to align. So basically, this was a bureaucratic hearing, and they took this bureaucratic back and forth by one of Kim Fox's subordinates, because she is Cook County State's attorney, and States is possessive. It's States, STATE apostrophe S. So by her job, she has to articulate the state's interest and the state's point of view. She's not there for herself. So the state law and the city ordinance do not align. And so the state's attorney has to come to the city and say, hey, you got to make these things match up. She never said, we want to lock up 12-year-olds. And so they obfuscate this, and they got an article talking about they accuse Kim Fox of wanting to lock up 10-year-olds in prison. And then they say, well, then they give some quotes from this bureaucratic exchange between one of Kim Fox's subordinates and the 3-judge panel, where the state's attorney representative never said, why do we want to lock up children? In fact, 2 of the 3-judge panel were suggesting that they might want to lock up children. But that was, the state's attorney was like, listen, we were just going through this bureaucratic step. We have to articulate this issue. Never once did Kim or any of our representatives say we want to put babies in jail. And in fact, since Anita's been in office, only one child has been put in detention. And that child was only in detention for less than 2 hours. So Anita has not been locking up children. She hasn't. If I say Anita again, I'm going off the air, I swear to Jesus. So Kim has not been locking up our children. She has not been advocated for locking up our children. And the fact that WEBEZ, the liberal talk radio, is aligning itself with the Chicago Police Department, and you think the Chicago Police Department cares about locking up children? That's their bread and butter. And the Fraternal Order of the Police and the remnants of Rahm Emanuel's administration and the political status quo, white political class, the white elites of Chicago, they hate this Kim Fox so much, they pretend to care about black children just to get her out of office. The same people that have driven the Chicago Teachers Union to strike because there are no nurses, there are no support staff, there are no social workers, there isn't adequate materials in the schools. The same people that are underfunding the schools for black children, the same people that are driving the Chicago Parks District employees to strike for inadequate facilities, inadequate pay, the same people that are undermining all of the infrastructure of Chicago that supports black and poor children across this city, pretending to care about Kim Fox locking up black children. And it is such obvious propaganda. It blows my mind. But then I have to say, man, are we going to fall for this? And to tell you, I swear to you, I was not that invested in Kim Fox. I voted against Anita Alvarez more so than I voted for Kim Fox. I swear to whatever fictional God you believe in, that's my honest to God truth. But now I'm going to run to the ballot. I just got my voter registration card. Every election cycle, they send me this card. Even though I vote in every election, they always send me this card with my address. And then they send me this thing saying, you can vote electronically or you can vote by mail. No, I'm not voting electronically. I'm taking my ass to the polling office and I'm getting me a paper ballot. And that ain't even, I'm just saying, if you're going to steal from me, you're going to have to work for it. I ain't saying my vote don't get stolen. I think my vote for Bernie and the 2016 presidential general election was stolen. I think they shredded my ballot because I voted for Bernie in the primary, Democratic primary, and I think they shredded my ballot again because for the general election, I voted for Jill Stein because I couldn't vote, and I could not vote for Hillary, and I damn sure wasn't going to vote for Trump. And let me tell y'all something. If they let Biden's old creepy, nasty, pedophilic tendency ass slide into the, then I'm going to write in somebody. Because I'm not voting for Biden. I'm not voting for Trump. And if it ain't no third candidate, I'll write in somebody. I ain't playing. And let me tell y'all something about politics that you got. Politics is not gambling. When you gamble, you try to win. In voting, you vote for, you don't vote to win. You vote your interest. And it is better to vote your interest and lose than to vote against your interest and win. You dig? So I don't support the anyone but Trump campaign. I don't support the vote blue no matter who campaign. I vote my principles every single time. I don't care if I got to vote for somebody I know. The one time I didn't vote for my interest, I voted for Scott Summers, who is running for Congress, because that's the name of the leader of the X-Men, Cyclops, Scott Summers. So I thought I could come. I had a lot of really clever jokes and lines about having an X-Man as a congressman. But he lost, got beat, trampled, stomped. So I had to just, you know, try to elect an X-Man to political office. And it failed. So that's the one time I didn't even know who he was. I just knew he had the same name as the X-Men. That's my one time. My one time I indulged myself in the ballot box. But after that, I don't play with politics. Anyway, if you're in the city of Chicago, vote for Kim Fox. Because if nothing else, it's going to piss off the police. It's going to send a pressure up. The Fraternal Order of Cops. So if you want to give a middle finger to the political establishment, to the Chicago political status quo, if you want to give a middle finger to the Fraternal Order of Police, if you want to give a middle finger to WBEZ and the corporate media of Chicago and the status quo media of Chicago, who insult our intelligence by putting out blatant hit pieces and manipulating the facts of a situation in order to manipulate our attitudes and our approach to politics, if you want to give a middle finger to white, established, entrenched power Chicago, go vote for Kim Fox. And y'all notice I ain't mentioned Kim Fox. I ain't followed Kim Fox. I ain't tripped off of Kim Fox. I don't think I've mentioned her name since she was elected office, since Anita Alvarez. I wasn't even enthusiastic in favor for Kim Fox when she was running against Anita Alvarez. I was just disgusted with Anita Alvarez covering up police atrocities. So I'm like, put somebody else up against her. And I voted against Anita Alvarez more so than I voted for Kim Fox. But this time, I'm voting against the Fraternal Order of Police, Chicago Police Department, the corporate status quo media, to vote this sister back in. She needs her job. Ain't no way her perm is laid. Ain't no way her part that straight. That cost, y'all. We can't have another black woman out of job. She can't do no home box perm. Look at the furrows, how they fall on. Look how her hair drapes on her shoulder. She one of us, y'all. And I don't like having to do this aggressive of an endorsement. But by the time Bobby E. Wright said, if all white folks are against you, you must be doing something right. All the powerful people, all the scummiest people in Chicago just hate this sister. They want her taken down. And they use everything. Now they just telling outright lies, absurd lies. What are they going to say next? Anita Alvarez shot John Kennedy? What are they going to say next? Anita Alvarez snitched on Tekashi? I don't know. But that's that. You can go look up the WBZ article. And I see a lot of people sharing this article. Fox office argues for right to lock up 10 to 12-year-olds. And the article is written by Patrick Smith with this ginger. He's a criminal justice reporter. Maybe you can send him. His email is psmith@wbez.org. You can send this dude an email saying, you didn't get me. You didn't trick me, white boy. You didn't get me this time. I know you're doing propaganda. Who paid you? I bet you his uncle or somebody's a cop. You know, he looks redhead, Patrick Smith. He could be Irish. You know, Irish cop. You know, the coppers, the paddy wagon. You know, the long history of Irish police and racism. I bet you he got people out there. The criminal justice reporter. He's a criminal reporter. Anyway, I'm going to leave that alone. Moving along. There's another. It's just stupidity abounds. I got to get to the topic. I might have to save some of this stuff. Stephon Clarks, the two cops that dumped 10 slugs into Stephon Clark, Terrence Mesivado and Jared Robinette. Terrence Mevacado and Jared Robinette. The two cops that murdered unarmed black man in cold blood. I'm sorry, unarmed. I guess y'all said it. Now Stephon Clark is controversial because he hated black people. He hated black women in particular and all black people in general. Stephon Clark didn't just hate black people. Stephon Clark wanted black people to know he hated us. And he went to social media and would disparage black people. And then he engaged in what I call eugenics. He wanted to have offspring. He wanted his bloodline to be diluted or whitened because he didn't want to have children with a black woman because he was a dark-skinned black man. So he went and had children with an Asian woman, and he had what he believed light-skinned children with good hair. And then he and his racist Asian baby mama would go together on social media and disparage black women and black women's features, black women's hairs, and black culture and the black community. And they would mock and demean black people. And he was very proud of the fact that his children, he had set his children on a path of self-annihilation. And I'm pretty sure if he had lived, he would be encouraging his sons to go on and have white or Asian or non-black spouses, and then those children's children. And I'm pretty sure Stephon Clark thought maybe in a generation there would be no blackness left in my bloodline. He ain't the only one. Go look at Eartha Kitt, Diana Ross. It's a lot of famous folks. You look at their grandchildren and you don't see no black nowhere in there. I mean, it's a diligent, it ain't easy to do to erode your blackness, but some of y'all willing to put in that work. Anyway, so when the cops dumped 10 slugs into his body, an unarmed man in his mama's backyard, I just like, you know, I'm not that good of a black person. I'm not the best black person. I'm not as pro-black as y'all. I admit it. I was like, I ain't about to I wouldn't take a billy club to a head or suck no tear gas. I've been to protest. Tear gas is a mother. And then they got, when, you know, you see a 1 day, 2 day, 3 day protest, you get arrested in a protest, and then they hit you with felony charges, rioting, disturbing the peace, and then you go back and forth to court, you have to spend your time and money, and then they'll kick you down to misdemeanor, trespassing, or failure to disperse, and then sometimes they'll drop the charge, or they'll give you a suspended sentence. I mean, protesting long after everybody, the TV cameras are gone. If you've ever been a protester like me, or a so-called activist like I was in my younger days, now I'm a revolutionary. I ain't got time for mess. But, you know, it's a headache. And it goes for long after. Right now, it's people in Ferguson. There's people in Baltimore with the Freddie Gray protest. There's black people all over the country. Things that we don't talk about no more. Hashtags we don't use no more. Stories we don't even think about. And it's black folks who took to the streets to fight for justice that are still dealing with the repercussions. And a lot of times when you're arrested protesting and you're arrested in these streets, you turn on your TV and you see brothers and sisters out there and you're like, yeah, go. And then you're on to the next thing. You know, it's October's coming up and they about to have pumpkin spice lattes and all that. And you looking to put out your fall wardrobe, and the people that were struggling all summer in the spring of that same year, they still in court. They still struggling. Some of them still having, you know, neurological issues from being put into stress positions by the police and zip tied. They still having sinus issues from sucking in tear gas. Their mucosal membranes are still irritated for months, even years after the protest. So my thing is, if the people take to the street, I appreciate protesters. I think they are valuable members of our community and make valuable contributions. But I think if somebody's going to go out there and take those kind of risks, the person got to be at least base level loyal to the race. Come on now. That's just me, but that's me. I ain't saying be like me. I'm a horrible person, I guess. I'm the Grinch of Pan-Africanism. Bless y'all hearts. So I say this. I wouldn't have went out there for Stephon Clark. But go and look at the images. Go Google Stephon Clark protest. Click on Google Images or DuckDuckGo Images and look at Stephon Clark protest. And it's mostly sisters on the front line facing billy clubs and tear gas. Anyway, the officers got off. And to add insult to injury, those two officers, those two murderers, will be back on active duty. I think this Monday. Oh, today. Welcome back. They're on the streets policing our children some more. Because I know the cops, because the murder versus the man are two different things. Because the cops didn't know he was a bootlicking Uncle Tom. But I can't say that anymore. I don't understand this stuff of not speaking ill of the dead. What the hell? Where does that come from? Nobody's ever been in. You can't speak ill of the dead. Why not? Your legacy is your legacy. I mean, if I died right now, it is what it is. As long as I'm being honest, I don't think you should lie on the dead. Anything you would do to the dead or shouldn't do to the dead, you shouldn't do to the living in terms of speaking, not physicality. So anything you can't say about dead people, you can't say about living people. But if it's the truth, it's the truth. And this isn't even speculation. Like I said, this dude went to Twitter. Said he don't want nothing black but an Xbox. And it kind of hurt me because I got a white Xbox. What does that say about my subconscious man? That even Uncle Tom could have a black Xbox, but Bro Diallo bought a white Xbox. But it was on sale. They had this big sale. So, you know, you put it on sale. I'll sell out for on sale as far as Xboxes. But anyway. So even though I have to tell y'all, I've got my tear ducts just sucked up into my eyeball sockets. I had no tears to shed for Stephon Clark. But I do have apprehensions because, like I said, the police who killed this brother, I'm sorry, this individual, can't say brother. Every brother ain't a brother, to quote Chuck D. The cops who killed this brother who wasn't a brother, they're going to be back on the streets. And they didn't know a damn thing about Stephon Clark's ideology, politics, and they didn't know anything about his experiment in eugenics, in eradicating the black phenotype from his bloodline. They didn't know nothing about that. And I know, like I said, don't come because I see people about to get, you know, oh, Stephon Clark could have woken up. He was a young man. I don't care. If you died 5 years old, then, you know, if you die as a young person, say, oh, yeah, that person, they pooped their pants all their life. It's not an insult. I think Stephon Clark would be dishonored sitting with the ancestors in heaven. I'm sure he was a Christian talking all that anti-black stuff. I'm sure he was a Christian. I'm sure Stephon Clark in heaven, like, look at all them monkeys marching for me. I don't want no monkeys marching for me. He didn't like you. He don't want you. And I'm sure he's asked to be in the white section of heaven. But that's not neither here nor there. What that got, you know, life is for the living. What about all the living black people in Oakland that aren't self-hating, bootlicking, Uncle Tom, handkerchief head, sellout, self-hating Negroes? What about that? These cops are going to be out there killing some of them. Policing them. So I'm saying this. I'm protesting their reinstatement for the living. That's all I'm doing. And all you super righteous black people, bless your heart. I'd like you. And, you know, if I had halos, I'd pass them out to all you who would march for a race traitor. I would give you a halo and some wings and a little harp because you truly are an angel. I ain't trying to be an angel. I ain't trying to be the good guy. I'm trying to be a winner. I want to win this revolution. And you could be righteous. I'll be the winner. I'd rather be the winner than righteous. Yeah, and I know that's another thing because then that's different than corrupt. I mean, just this. But it's to an envelope. He ain't worth all that. I'm just saying the officers, the murderous homicidal police are back on the force in the Bay Area. And I'll be in the Bay Area for just dealing with these types of issues. So holla at your boy. I'll be in the Bay Area. I'll be in Kansas City, Missouri next week. Oh, tomorrow, let me say this before I get, I'm going to be speaking about, and I don't know how they expect me to do this. They gave me 1 hour at the Northwestern Law School. They have invited me to give a public talk to their budding law students. Somebody must not know how to use Google. Because every time sometimes people will hear a snippet or read one of my blog posts and they say, wow, he has some good views on this particular thing. And they invite me out to speak without looking at all the other things I had to say. But that's not my fault. You call me, I'm coming. Anyway, I'll be at Northwestern Law School and they want me to speak about colonialism in Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America. But I only have an hour. I would need a month. I would need a semester to give proper insights on that. I don't even know how I'm going to do that, but I'm going to try. I'm going to go up there and talk to the law students. I don't know if it's open to the public. I don't even know if they'll record this. Because sometimes you go to some of these universities. Like I went to speak at NYU's Black Solidarity Day, and it was like some feds, national security stuff. They didn't allow no cameras, no recordings or nothing. And I went there to talk about America's final solution, genocide. And then I quoted Francis Quest Welsing, and it was a big blow up because there were a whole cadre of LGBTQ students who didn't like the fact that I quoted Francis Quest Welsing because her views on homosexuals and homosexuality, and they were outraged, and they totally dismissed everything else I said about the genocide, the slow rolling genocide being imposed on African people in the U.S. And the rest of the African diaspora because I quoted a quote unquote homophobe, and I thought that was utter nonsensical. But beyond that, they didn't let the recording get out. They didn't let the people hear it. But I digress. I'll be at Northwestern tomorrow, noon to 1, speaking at the Northwestern School of Law on U.S. imperialism in the Caribbean, Africa, and Latin America. So, and then I'll be in the Criminal Justice Incarceration Conference in Oakland. I don't know when, coming soon. I know as the days advance. And I'll be in Kansas City. And I hope Ricky Kidd, formerly exonerated, will be in Oakland. I'll be in Oakland with Ricky Kidd. Brother just did 23 years for a murder that the city, the prosecutor, the judges, everybody knew he didn't commit. And they put him back in the street and didn't even compensate this man after taking 23 years of life. And, you know, me and Ricky Kidd, our mothers were best friends and we grew up together, play cousins in the black community. So he's out. And I don't know if he'll be in town because he's been going out here. Now he's working with the Innocence Projects to help other black men and women who were incarcerated, not just blacks, but any people in this country, many people in this country. So, but I don't know if we're going to be in Kansas City at the same time. I know we'll be in Oakland, the Bay Area at the same time, but I don't know if we'll hit the streets in KC at the same time. But hopefully we will. I could talk to him about his time in incarceration and how he endured that and what his plans are and why he loved Jesus so much. But that might come up. I don't know. Let me say one more thing before I get to the topic. Kanye West. I'm not mad at Kanye West. I'm mad at y'all. Now, Kanye West just announced day before yesterday that he is no longer doing secular music. He's only doing gospel music, which is totally consistent. He said that slavery sounds like a choice. He supports Donald Trump presidency, and he said that the MAGA hat gives him superpowers. That might be idolatry. I don't know. We'll have to consult the Holy Bibi, the Holy Bible on that. But anyway, this year, Forbes magazine said that Kanye West was the number one earner who brought in $150 million in 2019 thus far, fiscal year. And his Yeezy brand did $1.5 billion, or is projected to do $1.5 billion over the next run. And so he's the number one artist, which proves beyond a shadow of a doubt, being someone who is at the very least insensitive, but at the worst, subversive to the interests and values of the black community, brings no economic, social, or political consequences. You can sell out black people with impunity, and even when you are at your worst, black people will come and support you. And so him being a Christian and going to God, now I think this is probably the worst thing he's ever done. I mean, promoting materialism, promoting consumerism, promoting evangelical Christianity is probably the worst thing he's ever done. I'd rather he go back to selling pop culture and consumerism. I'd rather he go back to selling overpriced, janky-looking sweat shoes and sweat clothes than selling Jesus. But there's money in Jesus. There's so much money in Jesus. Hell, in my worst times, in my struggliest times, in my hungriest times in my life, I've contemplated going to God. But I just can't hustle. I can't sell crack and I can't sell Jesus. Drugs and Jesus are the two worst things you can distribute to the black community. The third worst thing is janky, overpriced clothes. Overpriced, ripped up, sweaty looking, musty looking sweat clothes. And so Kanye West, all he got to do is sell a brick, and he would have sold all of the three worst things you could do, but the things that people tend to love. Who am I to say? What am I to say? But y'all going to let Kanye do this? And fine. And it ain't even Kanye. I don't trip off of Kanye. I trip off of us. But the message that Kanye was essentially saying, that you could go on the air and disrespect African people. Now, if Kanye West went on the air, went on corporate media, went on the national media, went on TMZ and said, the Irish were colonized for 800 years. That sounds like a choice. I don't think his career would be over, but it would be hampered more than it is. He wouldn't be allowed to travel to Ireland or do shows or promote in Ireland. Ireland would take that as a grave disrespect, and he would essentially be persona non gratis. Now, you know damn well if he went on TMZ and said, you know, Jews have been persecuted in Europe for 1,200 years. And I've seen videos of Jews, and it's out there on the internet, on YouTube right now. You can see literally Jewish people digging their own graves and then stepping into their own graves and SS officers shooting them back in the head. And the Jews offer no resistance. You'll see Jews going peacefully, single file line, into the gas chamber. They not throwing rocks. They not spitting. They not dragging them. But he would never say, you know, I've seen the footage of the Nazi Holocaust. I've seen images from Krakow. I've watched the rise of the Third Reich, or I've read about the rise of the Third Reich. And the Jews offer very little to no resistance. It sounds like Jewish Holocaust. See, it sounds like a choice. If he had said that, he wouldn't be on no Forbes list. He wouldn't be putting out no gospel albums. He wouldn't be sitting across from Donald Trump in a MAGA hat trying to sell Trump a plane that doesn't even exist. He tried to sell Donald Trump Wonder Woman's invisible plane or something. It wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened. If he said kids in cages sound like a choice. If he said homosexuality is a choice. If he had disparaged almost any other group, like he disrespected African people, he would not be at the top of Ford's list. Yeezys would not be projected to do $1.5 billion in sales over the next year or the next fiscal year. But Bobby E. Wright said back in the 80s, before Kanye was probably even born, Bobby E. Wright said, black people are the freest people in America, in one respect. We are the freest people in America, in one respect. He said, you can do anything or say anything against your own people, and the black community cannot, will not sanction you. You can engage in any level of treason or treachery. Clarence Thomas has been sitting on the Supreme Court selling out black people aggressively. And there has been no political or social cultural consequences. Clarence Thomas still gets speaking engagements to come speak to black people. But y'all love Obama too. So this ain't really about Kanye. Every race produces traitors. Every race has traitors. The Chinese communists, there's a bunch of Chinese traitors, a bunch of Chinese people who are not loyal to the party or to the nation of China. There are a bunch of Arab people, aren't Arabs, even in Palestine. The Palestinians got so many Arab sellouts. The head of ICE, over 40% of all ICE agents are of Latino or Hispanic descent. Every race produces sellouts. That's not unique to black people. But what separates the people in power versus the people under oppression is how they deal with sellouts. Uniformly, the people who hold power are the people who have any level of security or strength are people who have severe and swift and severe consequences for people who sell them out or disrespect them. The people who are under oppression embrace, celebrate, or have no level of animosity towards sellouts. I don't know how many more times I say this. You look at some of the top Jewish scholars, and to be a true scholar, you got to tell the truth regardless of the consequences. If you're just saying what's convenient, you're not a scholar, you're a hack. So to be a true scholar, you have to tell the truth. So some of the most prominent Jewish scholars, the Jews who look at the facts, will say Israel is an apartheid state. Israel is racist. Some of them even say Israel is not a legitimate nation. It is a settler colonial state that is engaged in genocide. Norman Finkelstein, Noam Chomsky, Max Blumenthal. And even though I don't agree with the nation of Israel, look how they deal with people who don't carry the line. Noam Chomsky, the most celebrated public intellectual since Albert Einstein. And he can't come to Israel. Edward Snowden, a Yankee Doodle, strong, red-blooded, patriotic American. He went against the white collective. Now he got to hiding out in Russia, waiting for a CIA kill team to show up at his door. And they coming. They on their way. The Chinese, I ain't got to tell you about the Saudi family. I ain't got to tell you about North Korea. How they deal with traitors. And I ain't saying we assassinate nobody. I'm just saying don't buy the ugly clothes and shoes. Don't buy the pandering ass manipulative records. We have to get on top of that. Check that. I mean, I'm just saying. We got to have some protocols in place. We have suffered more from treachery, internal traitors help the government take down everybody from Garvey to Malcolm X and everybody in between. Black traitors have toppled entire nations and subverted entire justice and liberation movements. Any race of people that celebrates sellouts will be eternally enslaved. This ain't even about Kanye, because if Kanye fell off tomorrow, there'd be a dozen more black people saying, me boss, me boss, me boss. I'll do it. What you want me to say? What you want me to sell? What lies you want me to tell? That ain't nothing. I don't feel bad when I see a sellout. I don't carry that shame. But I do carry shame when I see the masses of black people celebrating sellouts. That shame, that hurts me. It don't hurt me when an individual sell out. It hurts me when the collective embraces a sellout. But that's enough on that. I'm going to refrain from talking about Kanye. Let's talk about the topic of the show. Looks like we're going to have to half see this. Today's show, maybe not. Maybe I'll get through everything. I asked God to come help me with the Kim Anita mix up in my brain. And God did nothing because God doesn't exist. So, and I know I'm losing support. People send me emails and tell me, you need to stop talking about God so much. You need to stop disrespecting Christianity. And so they withdraw their support. I've even lost financial support because I'm going to tell the truth. And let me tell you something. The good thing about a truth-telling brother, the moment you bring me some documentation, some evidence, the moment you demonstrate to me that your God is real, I know you got a lot of songs, my God is real, my God is real, and I'm like, fine. I ain't saying your God isn't real. I'm saying you've produced no evidence that your God is real. So you don't have to stop supporting me because I simply am waiting for evidence. I'll take whatever. Walking on water. You know, kill the firstborn man child of every Egyptian. Okay, if we got to go that extreme, I don't need proof that hard. I'll take a telegraph. You ain't got to do it, but, you know, to demonstrate his might, turn a cane into a snake and turn it back to a cane. God is not against proving himself to us lowly primates. So go on and prove yourself. One more again. One more miracle. One more. I think I'm worth it. They say God so loved me, he knows how many hairs are on my head. How many hair follicles I have in my scalp. But scientists can calculate that too, so. I don't know if that's love. Anyway. Again. Jesus is King. Don't buy that album. Don't listen to those songs. But I know, in a couple of weeks, everywhere I go, when I pull up at a stoplight, Chicago loves Kanye. You won't believe, as poor as we are on the south side of Chicago, how many pairs of Yeezys I see on young and old people's feet up and down the streets of Chicago. Every time. And my wife's like, please stop pointing out. I'm like, look, them's some Yeezys. Them's some Yeezys. We still wearing sleazy Yeezys. Anyway, let's get on. Today's topic, self-destruction. No. That's not what today's topic is. Today's topic is cooperative economics and grassroots socialism. Now, socialism, usually, but anyway, let me not get ahead of myself. Because this might have to be a two-part show. But before I can promote socialism and cooperative economics to black folks, I have to talk about the status, what we do now, black people engaged in capitalism. And let me tell y'all one thing about capitalism. I'm going to quote Michael Jackson in The Wiz as the Scarecrow. When it comes to capitalism, black people, you can't win, you can't make it, and you can't get out of the game. Now, how are black people faring under capitalism? The combined revenues of the top 100 BOBs, black-owned businesses, the combined revenue of the top 100 black-owned businesses is $24 billion. Woo! That's a lot of Skrilla. That's a lot of cream. The combined revenue of the top 100 businesses all together, black-owned business, is $24 billion in the last year. The combined revenue of just Walmart, not Apple, not General Motors, not AT&T, not Comcast, not Disney, just one white-owned corporation. Combined revenues, $500.3 billion. So one company absolutely obliterates the top 100. The number one black-owned business, which is called Worldwide Technologies, the number one black business, it accounts for almost half of the total number. So the bottom 99 black businesses pretty much only account for just over $12 billion. Because Worldwide Technologies, which is basically a contracting firm for the white business, but hey, it's a black-owned business. Can't take that away. Y'all obsess about, y'all fantasize. Black people have like this love of black-owned business. Everywhere I turn, the black militants, the black Uncle Toms, every black segment, the black nationalists, the pan-Africanists, black radicals, black conservative Uncle Tom sellout handkerchief head Negro. Every black person in this country has some obsession about black business. Oh, support black business. We need black businesses. And rappers come out supporting entrepreneurialism. It's an ugly word, entrepreneurial. It's an ugly, who wants to say that word? Who wants to be, I'm an entrepreneur. But we ain't a damn thing happening. Worldwide Technologies revenues is $11.2 billion. A little bit, just under half of the $24 billion. The richest black man in America, Aliko Dangote, a Nigerian immigrant. Number one, he's richer than Oprah, richer than Jordan. Richest black man in America. But on the U.S. richest list, he's way down and he's the 100th richest man, but he's the number one richest black man. So he got 99 crackers standing on his head. We can't win in capitalism. We're not going to make it. And we can't get out of the game. Let's talk about this. Let's forget it. Okay, you just talking about black people. Let's look at all of us together. Black people circulate about $5 billion a year in the economy. And we got some stupid black people to say, we got to exercise black buying power. We got to exercise, we got to leverage our dollars. We got to leverage our spending into power. Blah, 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 blah. Black spending, $50 billion annum. But what is the total spending of the United States consumer spending? $14.24 trillion. $14.24 trillion. So black spending makes up 3%, give or take, 3.5% of overall spending. A margin of error. So even if all black people, we all decide to put all our money behind one big company, we support one giant black business and one blah, 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 and we all got together and put all our money in one capitalist enterprise. At best, we could double the revenue of the 100 top black business. If we all they buy black, buy black. Buying black would not empower black people. Because even if everything every black person bought in America was bought from a black person, it would only double the revenues of the top 100 black-owned business and still wouldn't leave anything aside. Because if you're supporting the little trickle-down, the little mom-pop storefront, little hair salon, little barbershop, little coffee shop in your neighborhood, it might make you feel better. Like I did something. And that's all Buy Black is. It's a personal thing. It's an identity nonsense. I almost cursed. And I see y'all on social media. I bought some black toilet paper. But in no way whatsoever does that change the status quo, threaten or upend the status quo. You can buy all the black toilet paper you want. And you, some of you say, why would I want to change the status quo? We'll get to that. So, the numbers just ain't adding up for us. Even if all black people only bought black-owned products, where they said they had some family, we bought black for a full year, and they were all over the internet. We shopped black for a full year. And they want us to buy black, buy black, buy black. But let me tell you something. The whole concept of reason they're telling you to buy black is to benefit black collectively. Buying black individually does not really change anything. There's a whole research, body of research out there by both Dr. Claude Anderson and Dr. Jared Ball. Jared Ball wrote the seminal piece, The Myth of Black Buying Power. It means nothing. Even if we aimed and targeted our dollars in capitalism, it won't make a drip in capitalism. Like the NFL boycott or all these boycotts. I think boycotts are still good. Even if it doesn't hamper the industry we're boycotting, it strengthens the solidarity within our community. It refocuses and reprioritizes the community. And to me, that is very valuable. More valuable than anything white coming from outside. What we do internally. So we got $50 billion out of $14.2 trillion in consumer spending. We 3.5% of the U.S. economy. But just some of y'all will say, hey, don't matter. I'm going to get mine, you get yours. And if you're on your individualism and you could care less about the plight of the rest of us, why are you here? Why are you here? That'd be like me, an atheist, tuning in to Christian radio every damn day. What am I doing there? What do I stand to gain? I ain't saying stop listening. I'm just saying answer the question as to why you're here. It obviously can't be for something productive. I didn't say if you don't agree with me, don't listen. I'm saying if you fundamentally, ideologically diverge from me, what are you here to gain? Are you interested in changing your point, your toxic, stupid point of view? But then let's look at a case study. There's this guy, multimillionaire. And let me tell you something about But no, no, let me not tell you this. Byron Allen. I'm sure everybody's familiar with Byron Allen's case, entertainment studio. Byron Allen is suing Comcast, and it's going to the Supreme Court. And we already know that Clarence Thomas is going to vote against Byron Allen. We'll see how the other eight justices vote. But we already know, going into this as a black man is arguing in front of the Supreme Court, that old Uncle Tom, Clarence Thomas, is about, you already down one vote right out the gate. So Clarence Thomas is going to side with Comcast. But anyway, Comcast has not been carrying enough black content, black owned content, because Comcast actually has a lot of black oriented or black themed shows through HBO and Showtime, you know, with The Wire and Awkward Black Girl. What's that Awkward Black Girl show? My wife watches it religiously. That Issa Rae show. I don't think it's Awkward Black Girl. What's the name of Issa Rae's show? I'm sorry. Just let me take a moment. It's just going to cause my head. Insecure. Oh, whew. I was seconds away from my head exploding. I'm surprised I don't know that because my wife watches it. But anyway, Insecure. So they got, but they don't have any black producers or programmers. And when Comcast brought NBC Universal, it was a major, major merger. As part of their merger deal, they had promised to do more minority network programming or buying networks or allowing minority networks to broadcast on their medium. And so they had promised to do 8 minority networks at least, and basically 4 for blacks and 4 for Latinx communities. And so Comcast hadn't made good on that promise. They were like, oh, we're working on it. We're looking. We're searching. We're sniffing. So Byron Allen was like, hey, carry some of my programming. Now, Byron Allen is black owned, but it's not black themed. So if you look at entertainment studios, because he brought his network broadcast on the Dish Network and many other mediums. But Comcast is the biggest. Comcast and DirecTV are the biggest. AT&T owns DirecTV, all these conglomerates. But anyway, he's basically saying there was a 1966 Reconstruction era law, federal law, saying that you can't discriminate against contractors in commercial contracts based on race. And so Byron is basically like, yo, y'all not carrying my show. Y'all are discriminating against me, and I'm going to sue your asses. So Byron Allen successfully sued, and the 9th District Appeals Court upheld his suit, and he's on his way. You got to go through the court system, and you got to go through the appeals process before you can go to the Supreme Court. And so now he's on his way to the Supreme Court to sue Comcast because they won't carry black-owned networks. And in the end time, Comcast is getting ready for the suit. So Comcast ran out and bought up some and signed contracts with black networks. Now they have the Afro Network, the Cleo TV, which was by the woman who founded Radio One, which is now Urban One. Name changes, but basically it's a black owned that caters to millennial black women. Cleo TV, Aspire Network, which is Magic Johnson's TV network, and Revolt TV, which is P. Diddy's TV that did that stupid ass panel discussion with that Uncle Tom and T.I. and that Uncle Tom going back and forth, blubbering at each other. And so they want to walk into this court case saying, look at all these colors, look at all these tokens. And so Byron Allen is saying, oh, nah, you ain't going to slide out of this because you were discriminating. You didn't meet your diversity quotas. And so Byron Allen founded this thing called the National Association of African American Owned Media, which isn't a thing. They just made this thing up And even when you go to the website, it basically talks about the court case. And their objective is to protect and promote current African-American-owned media. Now, you see, it's African-American-owned media, not African-American media. Because African-American-owned media can show you some redneck, like when can have white redneck programming. It's not broadcast. It said increase the number of African-American-owned media ventures, which is a lie, because media is in a phase of rapid consolidation. The more owners, the more competition, the less profit for the big guys. So I don't believe them when they say that. Ensure a fair, unrestricted access to all media platforms, including net neutrality. I haven't heard about Byron Allen putting his $500 million up, more than $1 billion in business revenues up for the net neutrality campaign. I haven't seen that, but that's what they claim. Indiscrimination in advertisement, investment, and license. These are the black capitalists. Now, I just told you about how all of the capitalism, how black people, even when you include the Michael Jordans and the Jay-Z and Beyoncé's and the billionaire entrepreneurs, black people, we still are at an extreme hyper deficit under capitalism. And what I'm reading, and the reason I'm talking about this Byron Allen, because Byron Allen has a personal wealth of $400 million. And his business, Entertainment Studios, does over $1 billion in revenues and every year. And they are still up under these white companies, begging and hooping and hollering and arguing. And these black billionaires still got to find the NAACP. Now, they got the NAAOM, the National Association for African Owned, and they still out here protesting and begging. And these are capitalists. Name another. Now, when capitalists want their interest, they found lobbying firms. They write legislation. They build infrastructure. They own the means of production. Black capitalists don't. So even black capitalists are just like us. They got to march, scream, petition, holler. Byron Allen has now working with the NAACP and the Urban League and even Al Sharpton. And now Byron Allen attacked Al Sharpton. He attacked Jesse Jackson. He attacked the Urban League and he attacked the NAACP because he said that these multinational corporations, these white-owned corporations, like to trot out, like they gave Al Sharpton the TV show, or they'll give these award ceremonies for Jesse Jackson and sign these deals. But Byron Allen is like, these guys don't own anything. NAACP, Urban League, Jesse, the big civil rights icons, they don't have any control. They're just window dressing. And Byron Allen said, we want ownership. But you already have ownership, even without it. But even when you have ownership, you don't control distribution. You don't control the airways. So what the hell is ownership if you're going to be owning something that nobody ever gets to see? Where you still got to beg. You still got to go to the courts. So anyway, this is something, what I'm telling you, the state of black capitalists. I told y'all. Even black millionaires are going through the same thing as black poor folks. Because a rich nigga is still what? A nigga in this system. I went to Sag Harbor. I was at Sag Harbor this year. This is where wealthy black people go to vacation, where they own second and third homes on the lakeshore. And there's this whole row. I went to this beach. Now, when I'm in Sag Harbor, I'm staying in a modest cabin, visiting with relatives. But they got this whole row of mansions, and your backyard is the freaking beach and the ocean. And this wealthy, affluent black community is being gentrified, and they're driving out all the wealthy black folks. So even when you look around town at the wealthy suburbs, don't just look at the black ghettos. Look at the affluent black communities. Harlem wasn't just a pit of poverty. Harlem had this area, this whole section called Stryver's Row, where black literary icons, black economic entrepreneurs, black politicians, congressmen, movers and shakers lived on Stryver's Row in these beautiful brownstone mansions. And the rich, wealthy, affluent black people getting gentrified. It ain't money, it's race. It ain't money, it's power. Money is not power. We've been told money was power, and we ran out and got money. And then y'all were like, and now, Griot, there's several articles on griot.com. Now, I have to tell you, Killer Mike has an article on Griot. Killer Mike demands black people stand with Byron Allen in discrimination fight against Comcast going to Supreme Court. Now, I was going to read this, but I'm running a little short on time, and I'm not going to be able to get, I'm going to have to do a part two, and I won't be here Wednesday. So it will be a rebroadcast on Wednesday, so you'll get to hear a show you might have missed. But also, I have to say, which they don't say in this article, thegriot.com is owned by Byron Allen, a subsidiary. But Killer Mike's basic thing is, he literally said, there's only been one Bob Johnson. You know who Bob Johnson is. He's the brother that owned BET and sold BET to Viacom for a grip. And now he's a conservative. Now he's supporting MAGA. And so what Killer Mike wants is more Bob Johnsons. More black billionaires. So Bob Johnson is out here praising Trump, supporting right-wing and capitalistic parasitism, putting his money up to keep black folks down. And Killer Mike says he wants Byron Allen to become a Bob Johnson. And I think that maybe Killer Mike is trying to suggest, well, when Byron Allen gets up there, he'll do better than Bob Johnson did. But guess what? Bob Johnson is going to the Supreme Court against Comcast, but his initial suit was against Comcast, AT&T, slash DirecTV. AT&T and DirecTV made a settlement with Bob Johnson. They didn't want to fight. Now Comcast says, we're going to fight because we're not discriminating. You're not going to dictate to us how to conduct our business. And we got a bunch of token Negroes already. We're awash. We got P. Diddy's Revolt TV. We got Aspire Network. We got Cleo TV. We got Negroes coming out of our ears. And they have Primo TV. They have El Rey TV. They got Latin. They got minority-owned networks on their mediums. So Comcast is like, just because we didn't pick, you didn't get chose, Toe. Go sit down. AT&T said, we don't want the smoke. So in his initial case filing, Byron Allen said Comcast and AT&T, which owns DirecTV, were discriminating against minority or black-owned networks. And so he said, also named in the suit, he called out Jesse Jackson, NAACP, Urban League, and Al Sharpton, and said they were fronts for AT&T and DirecTV and Comcast, that they put a minority face on discrimination. They give these corporations cover for their discriminatory practices for a small payoff. So AT&T said, we don't want the smoke, because AT&T, again, they're struggling. They're like, we creeping on a come up. DirecTV's not doing so well. We can't deal with the bad publicity. We don't want the smoke. So they sat down and negotiated a deal with Byron Allen and gave him 7 channels on DirecTV. You can go there and watch all the corny Byron Allen shows you want to your heart's content. And so he got the bag. And what does that mean for the rest of us? Absolutely nothing. Say it again now. Nothing. How is that translated for any benefit across the black community? How does the existence of black billionaires improve the status? When we find that we got more MBAs than we ever had, we got more black billionaires and millionaires than we ever had, and our overall status as a people is declining. Black people control less and less wealth in this country. And also the wealth that we do control gets concentrated in the hands of the few. And the hands of the few who have that money have every interest in maintaining the status quo. And let me tell you something else. By the time you're worth $400 million and you filing lawsuits and fighting for more money, you're not the kind of person that gives a damn about, because you already have enough resources to make significant change. A capitalist only wants one thing, and that's more. And no black capitalist is getting capital for the benefit of the black masses. They are not going to commit class suicide. So capitalism is not working even for the capitalist. The winners are still losing. We got black people worth millions and billions of dollars still out here protesting and marching and begging for their basic rights. So if Byron Allen, and he's got an Aryan wife. His wife looked like she came right out of a Nazi laboratory. Blonde hair, blue eyes, whitest white woman I ever seen in my life. This brother, if you don't get more integrated, mainstream, status quo, harmless, non-threatening than Byron Allen. And he's still saying, these crackers won't give me a chance. But he's saying, well, the system that's discriminating against me, the system that's dehumanizing me, I'm going to fight for further integration. He founded this organization. We fight for economic inclusion. So all I'm saying is to say that even when you win in capitalism, you still a nigga. And you're never going to be Byron Allen because monopoly capitalism is not going to allow you. Byron Allen's trying to be Bob Johnson. And he said, Byron Allen said that the executive at Comcast told him, we're not making any more Bob Johnson. That time is come and gone. No more Bob Johnsons. You got one. Hell, Trump said, you're never going to have another black president. You got yours. You got it. You enjoyed it. Now carry on, Negroes. So what I am advocating for, instead of black people going through all this rigmarole, we got 3.5% of the economy in this country when we make up 16, depending on who's doing the counting. Black people can be 30 to 16. Some people say they cut our numbers by almost half in this country simply because a lot of black people, they don't count as black. The black people coming from Sudan counted as Arab, blue black skin. A lot of so-called Latino people are black. A lot of Dominicans, Panamanians, Puerto Ricans, and yes, even Mexico has a large, over a million black folks. So depending on who, whether you're going off the federal government's numbers of we 16% of the population, or you're going off of who really for real black and not playing around with accents and these other slave nationalities. We can get up to 20 to 30%. It depends on how you count and who's doing the count. But that would say, even if we 16% of the population, which would suggest all things being equal, we would at least have 16% of the economy. But in things that are truly just, seeing that everywhere you look on TV, every ounce of media you experience, when you turn on America's pastimes, pro sports, basketball, football, baseball, you can't go watch a Hollywood, major Hollywood production without some rapping and some hip-hop music. You can't turn on and look at any fashion show or any runway in America or any runway in the world without seeing black fashion, black influence. It would beg to argue that black people should have well over 20%. 25, 30, 40, 50% of the U.S. economy, because damn, everything's coming from us. America's number one export to the world are cultural products. Music and movies and fashion. And it all comes out of the ghetto. Even if you go see a movie that's all. When I was a kid in the 80s, you look at the Terminator or Rambo. You look at the Predator movies that came out in the 80s. It was all rock music. Yeah, Hell's Bells, Adrian. It was all rock music. Some screaming ass weirdo white dude with long hair. And spandex, glitter spandex. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I used to hate that music. I used to hate the soundtrack of music. Go look at a modern action movie. Go look at a modern comedy. Go, it's all black music. I don't care if there's not a black person on the cast. I don't care if it's an all-white cast. They come in with black music because that drives the culture. That drives it creates the atmosphere. Every time I watch a movie, I'm like, damn, all they play is black music. That's the soundtrack to these movies. And now Jay-Z, then you got black folks, Beyonce, Prince, doing the Super Bowl. So our contribution to this system, to this society, to capitalism, does not reflect our reward, our revenues, our returns. They got us on lock, which makes sense. We got even the wealthy, richest, most influential black people out here having to struggle and sign petitions and appeal to the public and appeal to the racist court to help them against racist free enterprise. Good luck with that, Byron. And then even when they get in, when they say, hey, okay, you get to broadcast on our network, but let me tell you something. You ain't putting out no revolutionary media. You're going to study. You're going to do something for consumption of the masses, which means you have to sell to white people. You don't get to Byron Allen's level making anything that benefits black folks. Ask Jay-Z. Find out. Go look up the stats. Since 1992, the primary consumers of rap music has been white folks. And white folks says, I want to see you black people get on the stage and grab your testicles or grab your vaginas and gyrate. I want to see you behave the way I see you in my mind. Degenerate. Oversex. Inarticulate. I want the minstrel show. And we give it to them for great reward. Ain't no like the one I got. No one can do better. Sleeps around, but he gives me a lot. I keep you in diamonds and leather. Black folks, that's white folks. That's for white folks' consumption. And whatever black people you bobbing your head to it, you are a backwash. You are a byproduct. White folks didn't want to hear you and I back together again. They don't want to hear black people together in constructive relationships. You know, and I can understand. I get tired of watching movies where white folks are the heroes all the time. I like movies better when the white person's the villain. So I understand white folks. I see, I feel you. But you shouldn't, but I don't have the power to dictate your media. You do have the power. So even though we have the same desire, the varying power dynamics, don't give me a budget to make a movie about George Washington. I'm going to show him for the wooden tooth rapist pedophile that he was. But y'all have y'all own specified world. John B. Watson, give me my own specified world. That's a whole nother discussion. All I'm telling y'all that even when we win and we losing and we don't have a snowball's chance in hell, there are some economists that say it could take more than 5 to 1200 years, depending on economic cycles, for black people to come to parity with white folks. And all my life, I've never understood seeking equality with your oppressor. So the reason I'm looking at the Byron Allen case and talking about these numbers and how all black owned businesses aren't even a drop in the pan. Every black owned business could disappear tomorrow in America and nobody would notice. And all I'm saying is people like Killer Mike, who wants more Bob Johnsons, when Bob Johnson is a sellout, he's a race traitor. So all I'm saying is we're fighting a losing game. I'm 6'3". And if a man who's 5'1" challenges me and says, I want to challenge you, I'm going to challenge that dude to a basketball game. Me being 6'3", I have the advantage. Don't let me set the terms of the competition. Don't allow me to set the terms of the challenge. Because I'm going to always pick something that's going to benefit me. If Usain Bolt came to me and said, I want to challenge you in a competition, I'm going to say, let's do chess. I'm going to challenge him to play me in Mortal Kombat, the video game. I'm not going to challenge Usain Bolt to a race. I'm not going to play to his skills and his quality and his advantages. So every time we go to white folks and say we want to participate in capitalism, then the white man turns to us and say, well, you know, boy and girl, capitalism is all about competition, sacrifice, due diligence. It's about being willing to delay satisfaction. And we believe them. And while he's telling us about how capitalism is just about delayed gratification, holding to your morals and having a good idea and being willing to not sleep and to work hard and sacrifice all pleasures and family life, he's literally sitting on a throne of skulls. Sitting on a throne of skulls, telling us about hard work and sacrifice. And they never tell us, well, listen, you're never going to match us in capitalism, because number one, the first thing you need in capitalism is somebody to colonize and enslave. Do you have a population that you're willing to go colonize and enslave? Do you have large swaths of land that you can go to, conquer the people, kill off the people, and then rape all the resources from that land to take back to your homeland or set up a settler con? Do you have that? No. Oh, well, okay. Because that's the root of every name. A wealthy, even Japan. Japan was an empire. Japan occupied Korea. Even China's like, listen, China, go look up China colonialism. You don't win in this game. And another thing you don't do, the Europeans didn't go to Australia and say, well, I'm in a new land. What is the Australian economy? What is the Australian currency? What is the Aboriginal economy, Aboriginal currency? What are the Aboriginal economic value system? And so I can adopt a value system of the Aboriginal people and then work really hard and outcompete the Aboriginals in their own economic system. They didn't come to the United States and say, well, what is the value system? What is the economic market system of Native Americans, of the Iroquois Confederacy? What do the Iroquois use for trade and commerce so I can join their economy and elevate myself? They didn't go to Africa, which had the largest, most fantastical, the very word luxury. It came from an African concept of Luxor, of wealth. We all know Mansa Musa. They didn't come to Africa and say Africa has some of the largest markets in the world, some of the most expansive trade routes, going to China and back again, the Silk Road in Asia. They Europeans didn't go into any foreign system and try to set up their own economic system within a foreign system. They came there and pushed everybody's stuff aside and said, here's the new economy, here's the new currency, here's the new value system. Here's how we account, this is how we measure, this is how we value, this is how we will extract, this is how we will manufacture, this is how we will distribute, like this. So they did not compete with anyone. Nobody, even the Chinese. Chinese said, listen, the capitalists run the world, but I'm not doing it your way. No way, Jose. I'm doing a centralized planned economy. I'm going to do communist, central, authoritarian, my own form. Even if I'm going to compete in capitalism, I'm going to do it my own way, according to my own terms, in direct opposition to how y'all do things. And if you come over here, we will kill you. And we will throw a million bodies at you. We ain't got weapons. We ain't got technology. We don't have money, but we got bodies. And we don't care if we have to give every citizen of the Chinese communist state a hammer to run up against a machine gun. We will do it. We will be free. We will be sovereign. We will do things on our own terms. And now they're out competing the U.S. If they had simply said, like Africa, like the Caribbean, Africa is capitalist. But they play by America's rules. They follow the IMF, the World Trade Organization, the World Bank. They follow the structural adjustment programs. The African economy fits into the mold of Western capitalism. The Caribbean is capitalist. Haiti is capitalist. The poorest nations in the world are all capitalist. Capitalism has not worked for us because capitalism is designed strictly for, by, and of white people. And anybody that's profiting or thriving in capitalism are one or two people. Number one, you're either white, or number two, you did not follow the Western model of capitalist development. That's only two. China had state capitalism. They didn't have free market capitalism. China, and I'm not saying we do what the Japanese did or we do what the Chinese did. I'm saying Africans, we do what Africans did. And that's my argument. I got to get off the air. We'll pick this up tomorrow. Now, I'm telling you what the problem. Capitalism hasn't worked for us, and more capitalism won't work for us. I'm telling you, you are fighting a losing game, and that's why even your white racist, even Donald J. Trump, is encouraging black people to do capitalism, because they know it won't work for us. They know it. So this is Bro Diallo Show, Q4 Radio, AM 1680. Please kick in where you can. Thank you for my contributors, the Super Chat, Patreon, PayPal donators. Y'all helping me keep me on the air. I won't be here Wednesday because I have a speaking engagement. Doctor, I got some conflicts in my schedule. I'll be back Friday, and we will deal with grassroots socialism. We will deal with cooperative economics, how we can create our own independent system within this system as opposed to playing our oppressor's game and continue to lose for over 200 years we've been losing. Even when we win, we lose. Bro Diallo Show, Q4 Radio.